Welcome to Solder Smoke, where we talk about all things electronic and geeky. We meet on Echolink and swap ideas related to workbench and radio projects. If you have any questions about this podcast or suggestions for future casts, send a note to soldersmoke@yahoo.com. Our webpage is www.geocities.com/soldersmoke. As always, have fun, melt solder, and pass along your ideas.
KL7R, KL7R, on the Mendenhall Glacier, 10 miles from downtown Juneau. This is M0HBR, Central London. Are you there, Mike?
Yeah, M0HBR, KL7R. Been a couple weeks since I talked to you. Sounds like you caught the cold that I had last week.
Yeah, there may be a little of that. I think I just woke up, though. Let's see, it's 0646 British summertime on the 14th of May, and this must be Solder Smoke 22. Yeah, but yeah, it's been a couple weeks, and good to hear you, Mike. No real earth-shaking developments in the Solder Smoke sphere here. I went to a UK Ham Fest last week. I think that's probably why we didn't meet up here in cyberspace. But I'll tell you about that. And I also, following up, I think, on our last conversation, built the low-pass filter for my 20-meter amplifier, which means I'm now legal, legit, and ready to go ahead out onto the airwaves without causing a menace to the electromagnetic spectrum. KL7R, M0HBR.
All right, you're a good. What do you call it when you're a good netizen on the net? I have no idea when you talk about the radio waves or the ether. The etherism. I think that one is going nowhere, Bill. Well, I also have been trying. I was, like I said, laid up there for a while, but the whole time I was trying to get the final amplifier to work on my little QRP rig here. I told you last time that I had I had 5 watts coming out. Well, I was mistaken. I had about 1.25 watts coming out, and so I started fiddling, and I must have tried 30 permutations. I originally started with a push-pull using two CB transistors and two TO220 CB transistors, and I couldn't get more than 1 watt, so I thought, well, it must be my instrumentation. And I thought, well, it must be my output impedance, must be my input impedance, must be the fact that I'm running push-pull. So I tried a single, and then I switched to IRF 510s, and I can't get anything more than 1 watt out. I am completely frustrated and stuck. Hopefully you can get me out of this hole here. M0HBR, KL7R.
Yes, the exciting world of RF amplification. It all sounds very familiar, Mike. I'm glad you're feeling better. I guess you'd recover just to plunge yourself into this world of misery that is RF amps. I don't know. 1 watt out. Well, if you're working with 12 volts and the load is 50 ohms and you're not doing any kind of impedance transformation to the transistor, 1 watt's about what you should get. It just works out that way. If you look at the formula for that relates power out to the load, it works out that way very conveniently. That's why you see a lot of 1 watt rigs just with 50 ohms right into the transistor with just a low pass filter with no impedance transformation. I was recently looking at an article, I think it was like a Boots for the was some amplifier article that appeared on in the Home Brewer, and it was kind of neat because he gave values for the low pass filter, and one was just a low pass filter with 50 ohms in to 50 ohms out, but the other was for significantly more power out, and it had the low-pass filter designed also to provide impedance transformation and present a lower load, I think a 25-ohm load to the transistor. So, take a look at the impedance there. But, I know what you mean about the difficulties there. I'm sorry, I'll stop coughing here as I drink more coffee. But, you talk about how you know when things are going wrong with the final amplifier stage. For me, one of the surest signs that something is not quite right is high SWR. If you have an antenna system that you know is tuned for low SWR, for example, if I run my 20-meter dipole with my trusty HW8, I know the SWR is very low. And then I build a homebrew rig, and I put it into the same antenna system, and the SWR is high. Well, yeah, it's high because there's RF energy at other frequencies there, and that's a sure sign that things are not right. A lot of times, no, you don't do this, but a lot of times you'll get folks who will run it into a dummy load and say, "Wow, look, you know, the SWR is great." Well, yeah, of course SWR is great because the dummy load is 50 ohms at all frequencies, pretty much. And the real test is when you switch to an antenna system that is tuned for 50 ohms at one specific frequency. And then if you see it has the high SWR there, well, you know you're in trouble. You know that something else is there. You know it's time to start sacrificing chickens to Papa Legba, KL7R and Pro HBR.
Yeah, so I did some calculations there. 12 volts times 0.707 squared divided by 50 comes out to be 1.4 watts if we're assuming RMS volts. So that's about what I'm seeing. And that was NB6M, I think. I've talked to him a couple times on the air. He's a pretty patient fellow with me. Talked to me a couple times on running homebrew rigs from the West Coast there somewhere. And that's the IRF 510 circuit I was working with. I was working with. I basically ignored his output filter and used my own, which is designed for 50 ohms in. Maybe that's my whole problem, is I've got a perfectly designed output filter for 50 ohms and I can't get higher power. I don't understand that, but I will eventually. But that's what I was playing with, the IRF 510 amps, NB6M QRP mini boots, I think they're called, something like that. And that's all over the net. So I have an output filter that's 50 ohms, and I have an output antenna that's 50 ohms. I figured that I was having output impedance matching problems, so I switched to an FET, which shouldn't really care about the output impedance. It's a voltage device, not a transistor, which is a current device. So maybe I'm missing something basic there, Bill. I figured with an FET I could get past the need for current transformation there. Maybe that's the piece I'm missing. Maybe I still need to have an output. Maybe you can enlighten me there. And I've forgotten what else we were talking about. Oh, the output filter and the SWR. Yeah, I've used your trick. You mentioned that before, where you hitch up to an antenna and I've seen that, and I know when I'm not oscillating properly. I can see it in the scope, and I can see it on SWR, and I'm aware of that, and that's why I started with a nice output filter. Maybe I should have just started with a resistor, and played that game. Well, I'm going to learn something here. I know it. Back to you, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, load is critical. Even with the FET amp, Mike, and it's kind of, I don't know if I'm going to be able to it's the kind of thing where you really need to sit down with a chalkboard and or a whiteboard. I guess we should add that to our system here. But I went through this as I tried to understand the amps, and I guess the kind of the capsule summary here is that, just to think of it this way, you've got the load in the collector or the drain circuit of the amplifier, and as you've got current going through it, and as it goes through the cycle of the RF cycle, the value of the load, think of it as a simple as a resistor. The value of that resistor will determine how much of a voltage drop there is across the load. In other words, it'll determine how the voltage at the drain or at the collector is varying as the current goes through the drain or collector circuit. In other words, you've got, the whole idea is to get a varying current through the drain or collector circuit, and as the current varies with the input signal, it will result in a voltage drop across the load resistor, or later the actual RF load as we get further on. Now, if that value of the resistor, the load resistor, is very high, it won't take a lot of, it won't take too much current to drop the full 12 volts, and you don't want that. You don't want the drain or the collector going to zero, that saturation. So if you drop the value of the load with the same higher levels of current, you can sustain higher levels of current without getting to saturation and end up with more power out. If you play with it a little bit, you'll see what I mean. I probably hopelessly muddled it, but that's why the load value is really, really important in determining how much power out you can get from a transistor. It's kind of counterintuitive, you know. It is, but when you play with the formulas a little bit and look at that critical issue of how much voltage drop you get as the RF signal goes through the cycle, you'll see what I mean. KL7R M0HPR.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, Bill. You know, I did fiddle with the different windings the drain transformer. I screwed around with different windings on the secondary of the drain transformer, and it just made no difference at all. I couldn't make anything vary. I was going into this output filter that I'd made that was 50 ohms. So, I guess maybe you could help me out there a little bit. Why didn't the output transformer in the drain have any effect on output impedance? I would have thought that would have happened there.
Well, I played with it. I happen to be playing with an FET amp now also, probably very similar to the one you're using. And I too played around with different output transformers. And what finally worked for me was a little binocular core. You know what I'm talking about. It looks like tiny little binoculars. And the turn ratio, two turns to five turns, and I'm looking at the formula here, two turns to five turns, and then you go to the standard NP over NS equals square root of ZP over ZS, and I have my notes here, so that would transform the 50 ohms at your antenna to 8 ohms to the drain. It would present an 8 ohm impedance to the drain. And then you just apply the power out formula, and 12 squared over 8 would give you theoretical and max power out of about 18 watts. Now, I don't actually get that. I don't drive it that hard, but that'll do it. And it shows you, as you play with those formulas, how that impedance transformation works. It was fun when I did this. I was watching the waveforms on the scope too, and it wasn't working until I went to the binocular core and the 2-turn to 5-turn ratio, which I think I got from, I'm sure I got from the mini boots or some other circuit, worked out. So you might want to try that, just 2 turns to 5 turns on a binocular core, put the 12 volts through it, and it worked out for me, KL7RM 0HBR.
All right, Bill, I'm just doing some calculations here. Divided by, what'd you say, 8 ohms, it's 8 watts, 8 or 9, if you take the RMS volts. Okay, well, you know what I was doing is I was messing around with the output turns. I was increasing and decreasing the number of output turns, and I must not have been making enough of a difference there to the input impedance. And so I'll screw around with input turns and drop the number of input turns and see if I so you basically got a 2 to 5 ratio there. I'll play around with that. I was doing something like 4 to 8 or something. I can't remember right now. I'll take your numbers and I'll see if I can get any farther there. I did make some. I don't know if I told you, but I did make some headway on the NE602 balance. Turned out that that I got balanced by putting an RF choke between pins 4 and 5, the output RF pins, and basically like they did in the Wee Willie. He had an output transformer, but I just put an output choke there and a capacitor, and it seemed to charge up after a few seconds and then get a good balance, and I could still get RF out. So, that's amazing what's going on here. I've been laid up, and I've been wrestling with a stupid amp. You don't know how many things I've tried. I bet you do know how many things I've tried. I've destroyed a perfectly useful half of a virgin double-sided circuit board here with unused solder and Manhattan pads. I'll have to clean it up, or else use the other side of it when I make it for real there. Bill, M0HBR, KL7R.
Oh, I'm with you, buddy. I know. Been there. Hey, one thing I did that helped, and it was a difficult process, but I don't think you have this problem, but I did when I was playing with these amps. I suddenly realized that I really didn't understand the theory behind these formulas, like that formula that you and I were just playing with, the formula that relates a load to power out. I've been hearing that since I was a teenager, and I realized that I didn't understand it. Why? What was behind that? And so I'm fortunate that I occasionally go off on vacation trips that provide lots of time for reading. When we go and we visit my wife's family in the Dominican Republic, it's always a great trip, but there's always a lot of kind of downtime where I'm watching the kids as when my wife is out visiting the relatives that she only gets to see once every year or so. So I bring with me a really crazy quantity of books, usually experimental methods, solid state design, you know, all of our favorite books. And on a couple of these trips, I've just sat down there. I also bring a blank notebook and a calculator, and I've gone through the sections that deal with the kind of design parameters for RF amps. And I've just played with the numbers and crunched the numbers and gone through several different versions until finally it kind of clicks, and I could see what they were talking about, why all these different parameters, how they all fit together and result in an RF amp that'll produce, you know, 2 watts out with this particular load, with this particular setting of IDC and all that. And it was really a lot harder than I thought it would be. You always think that the design of the RF amplifier would be fairly straightforward and simple compared to the design of more complicated parts of the circuit, like the balance modulator that you mentioned and things like that. But there's a lot of engineering and physics and theory in those even simple FET apps. And it's been fun for me to go through the kind of learning process. And I keep the notebooks too, because it's the kind of thing you have to relearn. If you don't think about it in 6 months, you go, wait a second, what was that all about? I return to my notebook. So anyway, it's been fun and frustrating. I have the solder burns on my fingers to show the levels of frustration that are possible. But well, fine on the NE602. Yeah, I'll have to take a look at the, I'll have to go back and look at the Wee Willie and look at that RF choke at the output. I think I'm not sure what I did with the output. Let's see, I have the schematic. I've been getting better. One of my New Year's resolutions was to actually keep schematics of the circuits that I'm working on. Let's see here. I'm looking at my, there's the amplifier chain. The NE602 circuit that I'm looking at. I'm taking the output from pin 4. This is basically, I think, kind of a version of the K2 circuit. I'm taking the output from pin 4, and then I go right into a kind of a source follower MPF-102 stage with a 1200 ohm resistor to ground, which produced the roughly 1.5K output impedance that the NE602 is supposed to like. I think that's what I'm doing, unless I made some changes and failed to follow through on my New Year's resolution. KL7R and 0HBR.
Yeah, Bill, KL7R back. One of the more embarrassing things, doing this in a semi-public way is like you say, oh yeah, I'm getting 5 watts out, and then come to find out you really aren't. So you need to be able to swallow that bit of embarrassment there. But I'm tough. I can do this. So I'll play with that. Thanks for the heads up on that, Bill. I started with push pull amp, and I thought, well, shoot, this is out there in production. You know, how can I possibly do this wrong? And I managed to somehow. So I'll get there. Maybe I'll make a push pull FET amp or something. I noticed in the handbook, they say it's a 20 or 30 watt amp at 12 volts and about double that at 24 volts. That basically uses two IRF510s push pull. So apparently you can get a lot of power out of those puppies. So that might make a real. I haven't decided whether I want this this Motley Special to be in a handy talkie or just to be a base station or what. It's kind of a learning experience right now. I've got one more nice piece of circuit board left. A friend of mine gave me 4 sheets, and I used a lot of them for construction of boxes. So I've got one that's got my binaural receiver, and I got this one that's about 2/3 used on this rig. So I've got space for the receiver, and I've got space for the lower sideband filter. I'm starting to run out of room here in the amplifier section here. But as soon as I get some power varying based on something I can control, I'll be a happier camper. Right now, I've turned every knob I could think of, and I wasn't getting any change in result, and that's a frustrating state of affairs there. I guess we could. How did you do in your Hamfest? Would you call it a rally? Was that any fun? Did you meet anybody? Bill, M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, it was good. It's the only rally that I go to in the UK because it's very close and convenient for me to get there, and I there's a lot of great rallies in the UK, but a lot of them are far out of London, and they'll turn into an all-day expedition. And I only had a few hours to go for this one, so my son and I drove out. It's at the Kempton Park racetrack, and they do it twice a year. And I've been there, four or five times, which is good too, because now I know exactly how to go and where to park, and I know what the routine is. It's a rally. It's hams in the United States would feel perfectly comfortable there. It's in many ways just like our ham fests. They start a little bit later. The U.S. I was remarking on this to a guy, a UK ham, as we waited online to get in. The American ham fests usually start at the crack of dawn or earlier. You need to get there earlier if you want to get the good stuff. They're much more civilized here, Like, they start at 10 o'clock. Gives everybody time to wake up at a decent hour and make the trip. I think they start later because people are traveling in, and I noticed there were guys from all over the southern UK at this one, as far as the so people from the Isle of Wight, which is down in the channel. So people did come from all over. Yeah, it's hard to realize when you hear sometimes that the geographic thing here is just so different. I mean, you could fit the landmass of the United Kingdom inside the borders of the state of Oregon. So that makes everything seem real close. But then consider this: the population is over 60 million. So imagine 60 million people in Oregon. Imagine taking California's population twice and putting everybody in Oregon. So it's crowded. So distance is deceiving here, because you're going to hit a lot more traffic, and it's a lot more difficult to move shorter distances. But hey, this the rally was really worth it, and everybody's really nice, and it's great to be there with UK the radio amateurs, and like I said, it's just very much like the Hamfest we have back home. I always go there with the same kind of over the shoulder bag empty going in, and I fill it up during the course of the rally. My son went with me. We had a great time. I picked up, I have my list of stuff I bought. I bought two SBL1 diode ring mixers for purposes. I don't know why I bought them, but I'll build something with them. There was this ancient signal generator there, tube type, but it had a really cool custom-made UK dial. The name of the company was Windsor, and we were always going out to Windsor, and it had all kinds of cool British markings on it, so I don't know if I'll ever get it to work, but I bought it just for the dial. Guy was selling a 2-meter AM rig, homebrew 2-meter AM rig. I bought it for the equivalent of about $3. I don't know if I'll ever put it on the air, but there's a kind of revival of AM activity on 2 meters here, so it may actually get going. I bought a pristine 2002 ARRL handbook for the equivalent of $3.50, which is great. And I opened it up, Mike, and I thought of you, because I opened it up and the first article that was there The first project that I came across was the binaural receiver. So there I am. Look, it's almost fate. It's almost as if the radio guys are telling me to build a binaural receiver. I come back and I have, in one hand, two SBL1 diode ring mixers that I bought for reasons unclear to me. And in the other hand, I have the 2002 AWRL handbook, and the first article I come across is a binaural receiver article that requires what? Two diode ring mixers. What do you think? Should I build one? Oh yeah, we also got a laser. My son is really into lasers, and there was a guy there selling these really cool kind of flashlight looking things, and we just couldn't resist. And it's got, I'm holding it in my hand right now. Looks like a little flashlight. You press one button and you get some powerful light from a bank of LEDs. You press the button again and there's a different bank of LEDs that give you a burst, gives you a beam of ultraviolet. You hit it again, you get red laser. I mean, this is really cool. We're very careful, of course, but I mean, if you're 8 years old, man, this is as cool as it gets. So it was a big success for my, the Hamfest was a big success for my son. Plus he brought his new skateboard with him. And after we finished with the Hamfest, we found this amazingly huge expanse of very smooth, concrete and with great hills and slopes. So we went out there and spent the rest of the morning having him go up and down the hills on the skateboard. So with the laser and the skateboarding, it was a huge success for my son also. KL7R, M0HBR.
All right, Bill. Yeah, you turn on the UV and point it at scorpions, they light up real bright. Also, some women's lipstick will fluoresce. Sounds like he's going to have fun with that one. It sounds like you scored too on the balance modulators and the handbook there. That's what I did. I built a binaural receiver and it's got two SBL1s and kind of homebrew. It'll be interesting to see what yours turns into. The QRPL list had some surface mount diode ring mixers, like Tough One or I forget what they were, but I got five of them. I haven't used them, but they're little tiny things. Yeah, I think maybe you're destined to build one. That'll be a fun project for you. You could tell me how bad I did mine when you get yours done. Cool, Bill. Maybe you can plug yours into to your Sound Blaster and let me hear it like I let you hear mine one evening. And let me see how it sounds there. We've had what do they call it? The Long March here in Juneau. It's now May, I believe, and May 13th, and it's been raining since March, so we've been calling it the Long March. We've had just nonstop horrible weather. It's been actually pretty nice here today. Went out for a nice bike ride with my wife. We went out and biked for a couple miles, had some breakfast, and then biked back. So probably didn't do too well in the total calorie consumption, but it was an enjoyable day there, Bill. I don't think I'll stay too long this evening. I'll get this one bolted up and see where it goes there. M0HBR, back to you there, Bill. KL7R.
Yeah, KL7R, M0HBR. Okay, fine. Yeah, I know we started late today online, so it must be getting late into the evening for you. And kids will be looking for breakfast here in a little while. I just wanted to mention a couple things. Yeah, the binaural, I wish... You know, it's mostly a CW project, and I know this will create, gasps of horror from some of our QRP brothers, but I've been shifting away from CW, and so one of the things that really reduces my enthusiasm for the binaural project is that it is mostly a CW thing. But I don't know, I might give it a shot anyway. It's just always been really interesting project for me. What else? Oh yeah, my low-pass filter. I used the article that we were discussing that appeared. Hold on, let me see. I want to give the guy credit. I think I have it right here. I have it here in my... There it is. AM QRP home brewer, low pass filters for QRP transmitters, by Phil DeCare, WB7AEI, and I followed his words of wisdom. I was careful to select a cutoff frequency a bit further above the operating frequency than I had in the past, and I used the five-element capacitive input filter that he recommended, and it seems to have worked like a charm. So I thank Phil for that. If anybody hears this and knows him, just to maybe pass it on. Oh, right, I see you're sending me a message here saying that the binaural would work with phone too. Okay, all right. I hadn't thought about that too much. Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, stereo only a CW. See, that's it. Yeah, that's the thing. You're building it for the stereo effect, and I don't think it would work too well with phone. I have a hard time thinking about that. I'll have to give that some more thought. Hey, one other thing I wanted to mention, and this is sort of a plug, but I'm redoing my website and putting some new stuff on it. And I'd appreciate it if our listeners would stop by and take a visit. It's www.gadgeteer.us. www.gadgeteer.us. And the first page will explain the title. And I put some new content on there and put some new things in there. And this is not an effort to make a fortune, but I've been playing with Google Ads and Amazon Ads. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, the arrival of Maria Patricia, 6 years old. Just woke up, and now she's here with me. Another sign that might be time to wrap this up. But anyway, I've been playing with Google Ads and Amazon Ads, and it's actually kind of fun because you get to pick the books that you want to plug or have on your site. So if I mention a book in the course of the web page, for example, I mention that the term gadgeteer comes from the book First Light by Richard Preston, which I believe we discussed a few weeks ago. Boom, I put a little Amazon ad with the cover of the book, and anybody wants to get further information from the book, it's right there. So it's not so much crash commercialism, but it just kind of jazzes up the site a bit. But anyway, take a look, www.gadgeteer.us, and I hope everybody likes it. Feedback appreciated, as is feedback on Summer Smoke, of course. Hey, I'll let you go, Mike. It's getting late. Maria Patricia has arrived. She's not going to say anything. She's kind of mic shy. But we'll say 7-3s to you and to all the Solder Smoke fans out there. KL7R, M0HP1.
Okay, Bill. Yeah, I took a look at your site there, and it looks like fun. I'll have to crawl around and see what you've changed. And good morning, Maria. And this is Mike in Juneau, Alaska. 73, Bill, and 73 to the guys, KL7R.